Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the 146th episode of your favorite podcast, or I hope it's your favorite podcast, the Mod State Podcast. My friend, how are you?
I'm great, sir. Thanks for having me back. It's a great podcast to be a part of. I appreciate it.
Well, it wouldn't be possible without you. And
normally, you're the man, though. I appreciate it.
Try to be. Anyway, I would like to take this time to thank our listeners out there on whatever platform you're listening on, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Podomatic FM. I'm sure I'm missing Spotify. That's one too.
There's a few that we unsolicited. Very pleasant surprise, to be sure, but unsolicited got added too, and it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
It does make it harder to pin down our metrics, but that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's not the worst problem to have, that's for sure. So, anyway, this episode, a little hodgepodge of both, so I'm not even going to explain it. You can read it in the title of this and in the explanation.
Read them and weep.
Read them and weep. Indeed. One thing we do know, my friend, we used to talk about Trump at nauseam. I mean, there was probably a stretch the 100th episode, that I felt like after a while, and I think you did too, where it was like, man, we are talking an awful lot about this. But it was what was dominating the news at the time, and there's probably so many little things that were sort of undershadowed.
Everyone's saying it.
After a while, sorry, for those of you who are, if you listened to 145th, my voice wasn't, and nasally passageways are not up to snuff. And I'm similar on this one, so I'll make my way through, and I think my voice will hold up. But, I got a little weary of talking about it so much because it was the same continuing conversation. A lot of not knowing, and I think just to begin the first 10 minutes of this podcast, we still won't really know a whole lot other than the fact that Paul Manafort is going to trial. I think it's the second day of trial. And the more and more as this trial goes on, even though it's just day two, I think this guy is sort of destined for some hard time. I said before that I think he would walk. Granted, his sentencing, that's not even close down the road yet. We don't know a jury verdict either. But I don't know. I think he will, he might do hard time, but there's going to be no connection to Donald Trump in this. I don't foresee that happening.
Well, it ain't going to be like Good Times reruns, I'll tell you that.
Mm-mm. Not at all. But what we have seen over the last, and this is why I think it's easier to talk about Donald Trump and the administration today, is because we don't really talk about it as much anymore, so it's easier to catch up on current events. But what we have seen sort of transpire over the last week or however long it's been, is that they're sort of walking the narrative back a little bit. And this is really just from a bird's eye view. I don't necessarily want to see this guy burn. I'm very centrist approach here, just seeing the facts. But what I have been noticing is that the narrative has sort of been walked back from, this is a witch hunt, everyone's lying, there's no collusion, to then the one and only Rudy Giuliani entering the council and making...
Well, even if there is collusion, it's not illegal.
Yeah, so that's the new thing he came out and said. He's like, well, I've been scouring the federal code and can't find anything about collusion.
He's technically right.
However, that doesn't really... The one thing that we've brought up over and over about this administration is that there's been a series of not that great looks, kind of a bad look. And it isn't the greatest look for your counsel to step up and say, well, I can't find anything about collusion, so collusion is not illegal. Mainly because then the general population can say, I know you're right, but are you are you sort of admitting?
Are you righteous,
yeah,
though?
Are you admitting? Yeah, exactly. Are you admitting that there is, or are you forewarning us that indeed you will find collusion and that it's not illegal? And this has sort of been parroted by Fox News and Sean Hannity, of course. But it's just sort of, to me, it's, I just sit back and I got my tea right here. Popping some popcorn.
Yeah. Well, it's like has long been said, politicians and diapers and what they have in common, that they should both be changed regularly and for the same reason.
Indeed. Well, the one thing that I wanted to at least address here is indeed collusion is not, cannot find that in the federal code. However, what you can find is conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's sort of one step further away from collusion. Maybe it's the closest thing to collusion in terms of wrongdoing. But collusion, from what I understand it, and I'm sure there's a lawyer or someone out there that can define it better, collusion would be like me talking and being related in some way, some sort of relationship with somebody who's deemed unfit or a foreign asset, a foreign agent, a foreign agency, to talk to them, to be friends, to have a relationship with them. That is that collusion. Conspiracy, however, would be then using that agency's influence to manipulate something or manipulate someone or try to sway something back in the home state. So that would be, you know, Trump going to Russia and saying, hey, let's actively try to undermine Hillary Clinton's campaign. So I don't know why conspiracy hasn't really been used as the word, but collusion has. And I don't know where the origin of collusion came from in this entire thing. Maybe you can shed a little bit of light on that.
Maybe I can shed a little bit here because I'm taking crazy pills. Conspiracy and politics, and people are amazed.
No way. Who would have thought? There's no way. Not in the United States of America.
Here's the thing. It's like this. The people that cry about his speaking style or his informal rants, his stream of consciousness rants, all this.
It's pretty
okay,
bad.
I'll stipulate. We'll stipulate that for a second. And I know this isn't the exact issue, but you're going to see what I'm driving at. I'll stipulate. Okay, fine. So it's a bunch of stream of consciousness speeches, apparently from both President Trump and Rudy Giuliani of late. But that said, can we honestly say, particularly those of us under 40 in this country, that we have appreciated good speeches prior?
We do now. Or I think the because uneducated is not the right word, but the uninformed, ignorantly uninformed, uninitiated are now noticing this, that the style of oration actually matters, but it does. I mean, it. And I remember when they poked fun at Bush, and he could easily do that when it came to his style of oration. But I think then you have Obama, and then all of a sudden there's Donald Trump. And it's not just merely verbal. I mean, it's on Twitter. And one might actually argue that his style of articulation is much better on Twitter than it actually is in the human form.
However arrogant, he was probably right when he said well over a year ago that he's the Ernest Hemingway of Twitter. I mean, I don't know who's done. They've increased the amount of characters now, but I don't know who did more with 140 characters prior.
Well, okay, so Ron L. Hubbard wrote the most nonfiction, the most fiction and sci-fi of any other writer, I think, in the world, at least the United States. L. Ron Hubbard, the creator.
What does that have to do with?
So at least Hemingway is classic. Ron L. Hubbard is just putting it out there to put it out there. No, not a whole lot of substance.
Like Tom Cruise or John Travolta then?
No. I'm not saying I don't like. I'm going to go see the Mission Impossible. I'm nothing against Tom Cruise and John Travolta.
So you dislike the fool, but not the fools that follow him.
I think it's foolhardy, but I mean they put out good movies. Come on, Pulp Fiction.
L. Ron Hubbard is the one who wrote Battlefield Earth, who had the E-machine.
I'm just saying, if you're going to compare Twitter and your, if you're going to say I'm the Hemingway of Twitter, I would say, no. You're the Ron L. Hubbard of Twitter. You can pack more into 140 characters and do it more than anyone else. Hemingway wasn't quantity. It was quality, right? Old Man in the Sea. Come on, quality versus quantity.
Yeah, so he was more like Mod State.
Yeah, maybe. Hemingway was, right? That's what you're talking about.
Obviously. That's what I mean.
Oh, boy.
Any of these individuals, though, I got to say, it goes back to the old adage, if con is the opposite of pro, then Congress must be the opposite of progress, right?
Wow, that's a good one. Haven't heard that one, but that's good.
Well, I mean, it's we all want to talk about the president, you know, and I get it. He puts himself out there by mission of action. I mean, he and Giuliani are winning the PR battle.
Goodness gracious.
For one thing, Mueller doesn't fight back publicly.
No. But
for another, I mean, you've got the majority of the American people that feel like this whole thing is basically not necessarily much to do about nothing, but it's going to be a waste of money in the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's when you start talking about conspiracy, I think that becomes harder and harder to pin down. I mean, there might be some people out there where it's blatant. Maybe the Manafort's, maybe the Papadopoulos's, right? That's how I said it, right?
Yes.
Maybe people like that, the low hanging fruit, but to actually tie it directly to the president, I find that fairly hard.
It's hard to pin down in the same way. I mean, the polls where they ask women in D.C. if they'd have sex with Bill Clinton, and 86% of them said not again.
Oh, God.
Man, it's hard to pin down.
Man, you're full of jokes. You must be late on your side of the world, man.
It's 12:45. Zero 047 here, but I think it's compassion fatigue.
Well, you know, not to transition to probably the more meat and substance of this podcast or the latter
Stop
part of this.
Stop looking in the mirror and making jokes.
No, I appreciate your jokes. Maybe there's probably not as many jokes for what we're going to talk about next, but.
Oh, my face in a mirror right now is pretty bad.
Mine too, actually. It's late. It could be early morning too, but that's okay. So the second part of this, the other part of this midweek wrap, I suppose, if that's what this is...
The other shoe's dropping now?
Is it? Can we transition?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean...
All right. Just recently, and there was a little bit of hubbub about this on the Reddit sphere and in the left, if you will. And that was a Trump order to create a religious liberty unit, I guess. Maybe I'm classifying this wrong, but it's something along those lines. That
Church of America.
That Jeff Sessions in the Department of Justice has just created. And it's a religious... Let me get the exact name of it here, and you might have it before I... But the
I'm sending it to you.
Well, I think you already did.
You continue, but I'm going to send it for you.
Okay. Yeah, you can. You sent me a few things here, and now, of course, I can't find it. But anyway, it is a... Now, the actual order or the creation of the unit itself, the religious liberty... Here it is. It's a new office, rather, to protect religious liberty. And it was obvious. It was brought forth, or the inception of it was explained in front of a group of evangelicals, which may lead most people. And I don't think this is a fair. I think it's a fairly fair assumption who this is specifically targeted at or to help. Was pronounced in front of an evangelical crowd, which makes up an unmovable base for the president of the United States. So it probably is realistically a pander to his base to protect the religious Christian evangelical liberties that are so quickly and devastatingly being ripped, the fabric of their society is being ripped out from underneath them. And I think there were folks out there that were rightfully upset by this, and my visceral reaction to this is I always like to test my visceral reaction to this and then the sort of emotional, intelligent reaction to this. And my visceral reaction, of course, was, ooh, that seems to be for one group of people in this nation. And that's for those Christians out there who are feeling persecuted, that their religious liberty is being persecuted. So, and you just sent it to me, it's Donald Trump stands up for religious freedom in the United States, signed an executive order to ensure that faith-based communities and organizations that form the bedrock of society have strong advocates in the White House. Now, when you read that, I would hope, and one would hope, that this extends to all groups, all religious groups, whether they be deists or monotheists, that this extends across the board to everybody. Now, the visceral reaction that I think a lot of people have to this is that it is only really there to protect one monotheistic group in the United States, when the United States is a wonderful melting pot of diversity and different belief structures. Now, if it is not, if it is there to protect all religious liberty under the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, and of course, we have a treasured, storied history in the United States of the protection of how you would like to believe, then I think that's fair, and I'm happy with it. As someone who is far more secular, or is secular, I don't have a problem with one believing the way they want to believe, and if they feel that they're being infringed on and that secular society is somehow overtaking the religious part of the society, that there should be a balance, because I want this to be a place where everyone can practice the way they can, so long as it's nonviolent. So, and
where do we put Jeff Sessions here, though?
Well, so Jeff Sessions was the one that created this new office under the Department of Justice. So it was Trump's executive order, and it was Jeff Sessions who created this unit, this office to investigate, I suppose, injustices, if you will, to religious liberty in the United States. Again, not bad. I would like, you know, I hope that this extends to all practices and beliefs, but I think the fear of people out there is that this is really a pandering in an office for the protection of Christian beliefs, and that's it. Now, I don't think that people have to take a huge leap to believe that it is kind of just Christian based, and that's, now bear with me, because this isn't an attack, it's just looking at the facts of what has happened over this last year and a half, and that is, you do have a president who has put a sort of moratorium, a pause, if you will, on any movement and travel from predominantly Muslim nations to the United States, whether that is because it's a national security threat, because there is a threat in those nations because of certain religions there or certain people, that's probably partially true. But it doesn't really bode well to the narrative that this is a protection of religious liberties for all Americans practicing differently throughout the United States. So I think people have a fairly warranted fear of what this might be. And this gets back to, you had brought this up a bit in precast about this, and kind of had me dive into this viewpoint a little bit more. And what I would like to see in the United States in terms of religiosity and in politics and the fabric of America. And that is that I grew up fundamentally Christian, I guess, whatever that means, not evangelical, it was non-denominational. And again, I don't ever want to see someone's belief being stifled, the ability for them to practice. I'm secular, and I don't necessarily think that it's right that this nation becomes inherently secular completely. I think that there should be a nice balance. I think that anyone's right to believe or not believe should be fairly balanced, and that there shouldn't be more or the other, and especially those beliefs not be deposited into politics. Now, that becomes hard for secular, because secular is not a belief, it's secular or atheism or very far reaching agnosticism, there is no belief in a power. So, you know, any sort of policy, you could say, well, that's it's a secular policy, but there's no belief in something greater that's dictating those policies. So, as opposed to fundamental religious beliefs, that there is a greater danger, in air quotes, of that infiltrating bias and policy moving forward. And I'm not like doom and gloom here, but again, you brought up a good point. You said there's not really anything in the United States Constitution specifically saying separation of church and state or under God, or a lot of people say this is a Christian nation founded on Christian Judeo principles. Well, I will say that probably the majority of people practice Christian Judeo type belief structure and practices.
I made the point that, for instance, the Act Establishing Religious Freedom in Virginia in 1786. It states that the author of our religion, presumably God, gave us our free will, and that he chose not to propagate it by coercion. So you got to remember where we were getting away from things like the Church of England,
exactly.
For instance. And the larger point I was making is a little g God, if you will, as far as the danger in not even being agnostic, as far as acknowledging a higher power, is that then, in my view, and I'm not alone in this, but feel free to respond, but in my view, it's dangerous because our rights then by default come from the state. The state is then little g God.
Yeah,
because where do our rights come from if not from something bigger than us?
And so this actually opens up, and I think we could probably do another podcast just on this alone, because I think it's fairly philosophical and very interesting. And it's the sort of higher intellectual, one of the more higher intellectual debates about religion and spirituality or belief structures, that really, it's almost a dead end in a way. But it's still an interesting debate in itself, and that is where we derive our morals from. And as someone who believes, in your case, or people that I know, like you had just articulated, the morals by which we derive, run our society, keep good order, the rules or the tenets by which we should live our life, our morals derived from a higher power, a G God, a monotheist God, whatever you would sort of subscribe to. Whereas the counter argument to that is that morals themselves aren't necessarily or don't have to be derived from a higher omnipotent being that creates these rule structures for ourselves. Now, if you subscribe to, let's say, the King James version of the Bible, that there is a beginning point, a very delineated, like a very obvious starting point of where morals were created, the right and the wrong, the yes and the no, and that was with Adam and Eve, right? That's very clear. However, historically, that's a wonderful allegory. It's a wonderful story. To where we can derive our morals and start that standing. So, to me, it's a great way to describe right and wrong. However, I don't necessarily subscribe. The Bible is a historical document in the sense that it is. I mean, it's capturing wonderful stories.
Last column is a historical document.
Yeah, I mean, it is a historical document. Every document is. However, to me, to subscribe that is the true way that it did start, and that's obviously there was a God that showed right and wrong and where morals started from, doesn't hold as much water to me. And so then the question is to me then, okay, well then how are morals derived? And how can you prove to me that morals were derived from anything else? Meaning, like, kind of like the I asked a friend one time, do you think all, like, man or human is inherently good? And he said, no, they're not. I mean, you could see kids throw blocks at each other. We have to teach them. People aren't inherently good. And I would say to a point, like, yeah, I think given to your own vices, someone might not look out for the interest of someone else, the same way, but I think, you know, I don't know what conditioning environmental factors play into that. But again, I think when you look at a collective group of people who would like to see progression moving forward in a society and to have law and order or rules by which they're governed, you can create a lot of very similar morals or virtues or ways people can live their life that don't necessarily have to be derived from a god. A god is just an origin of where they came from. So, for example, murder being one of those, a moral thing. We don't murder another individual. Well, for society moving forward and propagation and in reproduction and a building of that society, murdering somebody who is within that group of people is, you know, it is not good for progressing that society forward. Therefore, is a good moral thing to do is not to murder your neighbor. That's not derived from a god or an omnipotent being. That's just derived from a way to structure society. In the Bible, it shows that neighboring tribes warred all the time and killed each other. And that wouldn't be that much different from...
same thing going on today.
And same thing's going on today.
And people quote these deuterocanonical stories in the Book of Judges and whatnot as if it's God endorsing this level of violence. You got to remember, if you want to even think of it as just a historical document, God did not want to give Israel, Judah, a king. They demanded it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it gets mislabeled a lot as the, oh, well, you see in the Bible... Well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a way of interpreting it, and...
Well, God didn't say, hey, this is great, everybody kill one another.
Yeah, I mean, and that just goes to a lot of agnostics and atheists pointing to the Bible as this, who is this loving God who would allow this sort of sacrifice of blood? And again...
Another side of their mouths, they'll defend Sharia law.
Some well, not I wouldn't say
not you.
I was gonna say I wouldn't say most atheists defend Sharia law. Maybe that's a liberal thing. I'm not entirely sure about that. But I guess that gets back to the point of you know, the Constitution and where this sort of order comes from. And I don't know that this religious liberty office or the protection of religious liberty is necessarily looking at sort of the overall protection of morals and the virtues and the sort of things that we like, the pursuit of happiness, liberty, and life, etc. I think where people get nervous is that it's there to allow for potential discrimination against other people because in the name of religion, i.e. I think one thing that Jeff Sessions had brought up was the Lakewood Baker here in Colorado. He labeled it as a win for religious liberty when, indeed, funny enough, the actual Supreme Court ruling really had nothing to do with religious liberty. It had to do with how the state of Colorado actually handled the case, which, again, is funny that could be misconstrued by Jeff Sessions. But again, maybe he's just maybe he's pandering to the ignorance of those people who didn't look into it that deep. I don't know what benefit to give him or not. But again, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry. I've been just taking airways.
Alexis, the French philosopher, I forget the last name, but he was there at the founding. He said that Americans have intertwined liberty to the extent individualism with such vibrant faith. He said it is impossible for them to conceive one without the other. Hmm. Even the non-Christian founders, they thought that it was essential. There was no ordinance, the establishment, or recognition of a state religion. Again, we were trying to get away from things like the Church of England. But the other side of that coin is there also wasn't an express denigration of religion. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't know enough about this executive order. I don't know exactly what this God literally only knows what the Attorney General is going to, how he's going to wield this. Okay. But I for one, have participated in over 100 episodes of this podcast. I've written not just columns for Mondstate, but papers just through the years, okay? And never once have I perceived it or wanted it to be, well, some sort of Constantinian well, either you're going to get saved or you're going to go to prison or something to that effect. You know, I think the issue here to me is that if a judge wants to have the Ten Commandments in his office, he ought to be allowed to do so. Mm-hmm. If it's in the courtroom, I understand how that might offend, because that's establishing a preference for one religion over another. I think it's turned too quickly. For instance, most people, I would wager, do not know that separation of church and state is nowhere mentioned in our founding documents. Is it implied? Yes, because again, the Huguenots, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, fled France because of religious persecution. The fleeing again of the Church of England. All right, there was a lot of bad actors going on then, people wielding the name of God to their own ends. But this idea that the founders came here and they wanted to establish an absolute atheist state, and that I think both extremes are incorrect.
Yeah, well, and that's an atheist state. That's patently false, because the Constitution would have been drafted much differently, I think, if that was the case. And you brought up a good point. You said, you know, there was, even though there was that separation, and it wasn't brought into the documents themselves, there may be, I mean, we weren't there, but I'm certainly there's history that could show us that there really wasn't this denigration or degradation, if you will, of religion after this country was founded, like in 1790. There wasn't all of a sudden this progressive move to secularism and atheism. That wasn't the case at all. And to me, it's to argue that, well, they were Christian men and this is a Christian nation and they were writing it, blah, blah, blah. You know, I that's not the case. I think we would have seen that in those documents far, far more. But
they stated that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. It didn't say that, because here's the issue here, that the establishment, it's basically been, the paradigm has been redefined in that government's limitations have been reduced. Okay. It clearly to the point that we're clearly willing to, on some sides of the aisle, no fingers pointed, are willing to clearly violate the amendment's next clause, which is prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Mm-hmm. And the third clause being abridging the freedom of speech. Okay. So are our rights contrived from the courts? Is the government limited in any way in its power? Who is the state answerable to?
Yeah. I mean, it's a super interesting conversation.
That's the problem without a little g God. I don't mean I want you to finish that thought, but that's my thing. I'm not trying to cram Catholicism or a belief in God.
No.
Going to church on anyone. I simply want to caution folks who say the whole, let's strip it away, there needs to be no acknowledgement whatsoever, because I don't know if anybody's looked around our government at state, local, or God only knows literally the federal level, but that's pretty scary to think that that's who's going to define our morals, that their translation, their iteration, as opposed to some semblance of a higher standard.
Sure. And I mean, that's where
that scares me.
And that's where the argument comes back to is what is that higher standard? And I think maybe that's the makings of another podcast episode in itself.
I think it is.
Of what that higher standard is.
I think it is too, because I mean, things like the things that get thrown at the Catholics, for instance, if the Inquisition, that wasn't instigated by the Vatican. It came out of the Spanish court, the court of the king, okay? You referenced the Crusades. Well, if you look at the fact that over half a dozen of the original major, it's hard to say metropolitan, but community center, you know, the population center churches are no longer Christian states. They're Muslim states.
Yeah, Islamic,
well,
yeah.
There's the reason in and of itself. Proof is in the pudding. It's no longer Constantinople.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we could dive. I think it just now that it's opening up, this is a really interesting podcast episode for later on to discuss that. But, you know, I as always, even as something as contentious as religion, we managed to make it fairly palatable for everybody and incredibly civil. So I think
that's our intent. That's my intent. I'm not here to proselytize. And with that, though, I also feel compelled to not you, but in general, the public record is okay. I'm not endorsing this office. Okay. And again, I dread what Attorney General Jeff Sessions is going to do with it. And Vice President Mike Pence being heavily involved makes me nervous. The other side of this, though, is that I'm really sick to death of the church constantly being made to be this bad actor. And I'm going, nobody feeds more people, houses more homeless, and educates more people than the Catholic Church alone.
Mm-hmm.
Worldwide.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not,
you're not.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I think in beyond what the church stands for, I think that probably overall it's not the God, I think, necessarily that I take issue with. And
it's the people that do things in the name of God.
It's very true. I think that's
like Mahatma Gandhi said. He said, you know, I love and admire your Christ, I despise your Christians because they're so very unlike your Christ.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So but not to cut us short,
podcast for a different time. I get
exactly,
it.
Exactly. So, and not to cut us short, but I do have to be up for work.
Well, early this, tomorrow. Obviously the Crusades, we've been wanting to do that one for a while.
Yes.
That is definitely a standalone podcast.
Indeed. So we've got a couple standalones from this, and I always like podcasts like episodes like this because it's just more fodder for us later. And as always, my friend, it's a pleasure to do this with you, and it's always a pleasure to do this civilly as always.
It's an honor to be invited, and it's an honor to participate in what I hope is a turning of a corner for, at the very least, our generation, which, you know how I feel about it. I'm not very impressed with it, but like it or not, we are coming into power soon, and fiscal nightmares down the road aside, the dialogue, the discourse has got to change, okay?
Because we do have to live with one another.
I'm Catholic, you're agnostic, but we're still able to have a civil discussion here and find a meeting in the middle. We both still love and respect one another from 7+ years of knowing each other in the service. That's the trend that I want us to be a part of setting, to set a positive example, because you know this is not hubris when I say our generation needs heroes of its own.
Indeed.
Now, I'm not claiming that's me. I think you're the far more inspirational person. But if I can help facilitate positive dialogue, I mean, that's we serve a purpose.
If we can facilitate and foster it, that will be my legacy that I'll be happy for. So,
well, you've done a man's job, sir.
Well, thank you, my friend.
Better soon.
Absolutely. Until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you, my friend.
Why you have to dig so deep into it.
Welcome to the World's Worst Monster Podcast.